Michael, my dear. You're listening to WORT Madison. Stay tuned for Mel and Floyd. Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make the next... I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. It's your weekly roundup of current events, popular culture, and things you need to know. I'm your host, the WRT Toastmaster General, Mr. Smarty Pants, and filling in for Mel just this week, or maybe in the future, I don't know, is maybe. Mel's second cousin, once removed on his Uncle Sidney's side, the incredible, the inedible, Elmer. Say hi to the humans, Elmer.
Hello, race fans. It's good to be back. This is my very second appearance on Mel and Floyd, and I'm honored to fill the role of engineer co-host,
engineer
bad boy.
Focus. Yeah, yes. Exactly. A lot of people don't know that Mel actually engineers while he does the show, which is why the two of us can be in here in our cone of silence, or whatever the opposite of that is.
No, the cone of silence. We do need to bring that back, don't we?
Yeah, it'd be good for our show, at least. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm thinking that maybe I should get trained, but my problem is I have a one-track mind, and I know that if I'm like trying to run the board, you guys have two tracks at least,
right? At least two.
And well, Ken has eight tracks because that's his era, but I don't think I'd be able to like actually talk and push the little chromium switches at the same time.
I gotcha. Yeah, and maybe you'd be distracted by James Brown here in the background. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
But all those lights, they're just, they're kind of, they're activating, I think I'm having some kind of aura or something here as a result, so be careful of that.
It's not as hard as it looks, but it's nice to have someone that does that for you, and then you don't have to think about it at all. You can just go and do your thing.
That's right.
I'm happy to be the go-to guy for this.
All right, go-to. Hey, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I want your opinion on this idea. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who didn't hear last week's show or know what's going on, poor Mel had a bicycle accident, and he's fine. And thank you, by the way, for all of the amazing messages and offers of help and all the other things that people have been sending to the Mel and Floyd mailbag at gmail.com. All one word, Mel and Floyd mailbag. But he's not going to be readily available for the show for an indeterminate period. He's doing PT right now and OT, and he seems like he's doing pretty well. And I think he's still on the pain meds because he's sending me some very strange jokes during the week. But that's okay. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, you're ready for it.
But I have an idea. I want to know what you, as a professional staffer here at the WRT, might think about this idea. I was thinking about actually having maybe some minions who would really like to maybe come down to the studio for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, come on the air, and we could interview them. We could chat with them and ask them questions about why in the world they like the show and things about their lives and whatever. You know,
I think there's probably someone at the door right now that's just heard it and like pulled over and ran to the station.
I just think that would, I mean, I got...
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking because I have a hard time doing this kind of just talking. I mean, it's always been a partnership, and I like the idea of interviewing somebody or having them interview us, you know, right? I mean, somebody come and say, hey, what about this? What about that? What were you thinking when you said that? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I just like the interactivity of it because that's, and of course, what it's all about.
I think that's a great idea, and we should organize a promotional announcement or a web post or something like that.
Yeah, and a search party.
A search party, yes. And so... Sorry, I'm a little froggy today. I think that would be very easy to do, and you would have a long list of people that would be like, oh my goodness, I get to be on the air.
Yeah. Ooh.
So yes, let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So that's an idea, and if you have if you want to be one of those people, we'll do some stuff to put the idea out there. Now it's not you're not going to be a co-host. That would be
no.
That would be too problematic. But just come on the air. You know, we've had some people guests.
Yeah, we had guests before.
We've had guests before. People that we had this wonderful couple come down from northern Wisconsin who were on the air because they listened to us, and they've always just wanted to do that, and they've both been involved in public radio in their area and stuff. I just thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice to have more people who listen to the show just on the air for, you know, little snippets, but it would be maybe, again, like 10, 15 minutes or so, however much they can stand to be in the presence of our greatness. No, how much they can stand.
Before they clam up and decide they don't want to be on the air.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, well, there's that too.
Yes.
But, you know, the greatest thing about being on radio, being any kind of non-visual medium, is you can come in wearing whatever you want. If you have, you know, if you have too many eyes or not enough or whatever, we're okay with that because people have all sorts of views about what Mel and I look like. And we'll give that away. Mel and I look like. And then when they meet us, they're kind of like, well, you don't look like that because, of course, they have a radio view of what we
are. Well, when I first heard of you guys, I thought that Ken, sorry, I thought
we're
Mel,
both doing that
we're
now.
Doing that now.
We've already divested him.
I thought there was
his role.
Well, I was confused because it was you and Mel, and I thought his name was Melon Floyd. Like
Melon
his name
Floyd,
was Melon, and his last name was Floyd. Because you seem unrelated in terms of the name of the show.
Right. Yeah, it's a floating personality.
Melon Floyd, and I was like,
Floyd's always on
Melon.
Assignment.
Yeah,
that's the thing. So we actually did get some mail one time. That was addressed to Melon Floyd. Mm. It was M-E-L-O-N, like, you know, like muskmelon or something. Let's see. Caller Ellen Pollen, who dropped off the proposed school lunch, is answering your call for Minion volunteers. Well, this is a sly way to move into what Ellen actually... Thank you, Ellen. Ellen is on the button. She left something really nice.
Oh,
although
nice.
It's satiric, so it's appropriately Melon Floyd. So she left a thing called Gummy Candy Lunchables.
Wow, that's a real thing.
Yep, there's gummy candy at the top. It's in a cardboard package with plastic, and there's a gummy at the top, and then it's got nachos with cheese and salsa with dripping gummy candy in it.
Wow.
Yeah, and she says this is the new Trump school lunch. I have to disagree with you, Ellen, because I think this costs too much.
I was going to say
the Trump
there's
budget.
Way too.
There's a billionaire that could get some money on.
Yeah, the packaging is very fancy.
Yeah, it's too fancy. Good to the last bite. Yeah, she says. So she put a little note in here.
Gum to the last drop.
Yeah, Trump lunch. 5 days of school lunch. Three flavors of sauce possible. 5 servings per package. Needs no refrigeration.
It keeps those kids busy though. Yeah, chewing all day.
It does. It keeps the jaws going.
That's right.
And then she put in, I don't know what this was all about, but she put in a severed dollar bill. It's been cut down the middle. I think that means something too.
If you tape it back together, they got to take it at the bank. If it's like, I think 70% of the bill is there, then they have to legally take it. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Don't ask me why I know that.
Okay, I don't want to ask you. But my Ellen put her mindless minion number on here, and I hope she doesn't mind disclosing it. It's number 10,297,166,711. I use a really good algorithm to generate these mindless minion numbers. This was the world's population they estimate in 2070. So.
Yeah, aren't you in charge of the numbers? You gave her that number?
I just want to say that I'm the lead person on the numbers.
Right, yeah. But not the only one.
We have a crack team of math magicians that sit down and figure these out to suit it to your personality. You know, if you ever want
right,
a mindless
true.
Minion number, please get in touch with us. We give out these mindless minion cards.
Yes.
You can give a small donation to the station if you like, just to get one. And then you can be part of the Melon Floyd hordes of mindless minions.
Free napkins.
Do you
everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that how it works?
Yes. Yes. She Must Be Obeyed went out and did a survey to find out what you could get if you flashed your mindless minion card. And I think she got an extra plastic sack and some free napkins.
Yes.
So that was good.
That's fantastic.
You never know when you might
make
need
sure
those.
You use it everywhere.
Are you a mindless minion, Elmer?
I do not have a number. I'm just a fan, that's all.
As Mel's second cousin twice removed on his Uncle Sydney's side, that's probably a family discount you can get on that.
Oh, wow. So I get double free napkins.
Exactly. So I was looking over the stories for today, the news nuggets, as we like to call them here on the show. And, you know, I generally block off the information that I'm sharing with people into four categories: politics, capitalism, justice, and science. And I've decided that politics and capitalism They're the same thing.
They are the same thing now.
I mean, we pretended they weren't, but they are definitely
they have
now.
They have the same goals at this point.
They have the same goals at this point. There's no difference between the two. Yes. And I was looking at this. I mean, the number one story I had this week that cracked me up with the headline. This is from the New York Times, and it says, Republicans aim to defang rules on fuel economy. Bill would end fines. And I was thinking about that verb, defang.
Right.
And I thought, now, think about this, Elmer. Do you think that our government actually has fangs when it comes to enforcing any kind of environment? It's more like they gum you for a while and then they get tired.
Yeah.
Right?
There are no fangs. Not anymore, anyway.
I just like, where does that come from? But the Republicans in the Senate, you know, they're all of the witches are around the giant pot now trying to see what, you know, Eye of Newt is going in there and everything else in the bill. And the Republicans in the Senate are considering a measure in President Trump's big domestic policy bill that would essentially nullify fuel efficiency rules. There'll be like suggestions. These rules, by the way, have been in place for 50 years.
Okay? Wow.
The last time that people debated this, Jaws was in the theaters. Okay.
Right.
And now here we are 50 years later. Everything old is new again. And these laws were passed originally. The Corporate Average Fuel Economy Act was passed by Congress in 1975. Well, you know, we're going back to the Gilded Age, so the Republicans say we got to get rid of that. And here's the thing. Basically, it's a suggestion. They don't want there to be any kind of rule, any kind of penalty, no enforcement. So it's going to be goodwill, basically.
We're going back to the era of inefficiency. We want everything to be inefficient. We want those engines to be burning and burning and burning.
And to get your gremlin and start driving around.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So that was probably passed as a result of the energy crisis. Wasn't that a thing in the
70s? Yeah, they actually had to worry about it because we had less of the thing that everybody used, you know, in a really sort of drunken way. Like, hey, that car needs to be 12. You ever see any of those cars from the 70s? I love those. You can play tennis in the back seat. You know?
Oh, yeah. You can
land a helicopter on the trunk.
You can put a lot of bodies in the back seat, in the trunk.
So, Omar, I got to ask you, did you happen to... You're kind of a news maven, I would say.
I like the news.
I know you do. I was watching when the NATO leaders were getting out of their limos.
Oh,
there in The Hague.
Yes,
I was watching them get out of their limos, and I encourage you to go, people listening, go online, look this up. So you get, you know, like the president or the prime minister of Italy, and she gets out, and you get the president of France and his wife, and they get out.
Right.
And they've got these, it's at the Royal Palace in The Hague. So they've got these liveried servants that are opening the door and saying hi to you and leading you up the steps and everything. The president of these United States pulls up. I swear to God, he's got a fleet of vehicles that all look like the mobster vehicles.
Of course.
None of the liveried servants come up because, of course, they don't. What gets out of all the cars are like Guido and clamps, right? You know, to open the door,
right?
And then the mob boss gets out, straightens his tie. Of course, he has to straighten his tie.
Yep.
You know, looks around, you know, trying to see if there's any more snipers. I mean, I was just like, man alive! It's just, I mean, I know he's got security concerns, but it just looked like, it was like I was watching Godfather, whatever.
It is his fantasy, though, like to have this surrounding sort of mob that carries him everywhere and protects him.
Yeah.
And
he loves the mob in both forms.
Yes.
Both
at the the angry one and the friendly one.
And the friendly one. Any rate. So let's see there were some other things here. If the big, beautiful bill becomes law, 16 million people are likely to use their health coverage as a result.
Big and beautiful.
Yeah, big and beautiful. So people are going to die as a result of this, of course.
But everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
Senator Ernst told us that.
I've heard that. She schooled us on that one, didn't she? Yeah.
I'm from Iowa, so when things like that pop, I'm like, oh, well.
You are? Where are you from in Iowa?
I'm from Cedar Falls, Iowa.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right.
Did you enjoy growing up there?
It was a nice place to grow up.
Yeah.
My parents both worked for the University of Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
And my dad was a film professor, film and TV and radio professor, and good schools.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're like now. And that was 35 years ago that I lived there.
Oh, good Lord.
So, but when I went back for my 20th reunion, the city that I grew up in had passed a one penny local tax to remodel all of the schools in town.
Okay.
And it had passed with flying colors, and they had built a new auditorium in my high school.
Any Ten Commandments anywhere?
There might have been some Ten Commandments, but maybe they are there now. My 20th was 15 years ago. So that may be happening in Iowa at this point, but they actually spent money locally. They did what government's supposed to do, raised a little bit of money on a local tax to remodel the schools.
Wow, that's a novel concept.
Yeah, I was just like, wow, that really still happens?
So did you see people at your 20th reunion that, was it traumatic? Was it interesting?
I talked to several people who looked at me as if I was insane. I found my friends and talked to them, and that was great. But lots of people that I approached and just said, hi, how's it going? We're like blank stares.
Yeah, I was one of those people that had the blank stare because I didn't remember half the people that said hi to me.
How big was your class?
It was about, this is Eastern Kentucky, so it couldn't have been too big. I think it was about maybe 70 or something.
Oh, mine was 350.
Yeah,
we were pretty small. So it was a lot of people. Yeah, it was. Not much has changed.
We had a lot of people that didn't make it to seniors, too. So.
Well, I also realized there were a lot of people that had never left the town, like had not actually ventured outside of the town.
Yeah, I
like,
got a prize for coming the farthest. And I was coming from Wisconsin.
That's not that far.
Yeah. That was pretty weird.
It's okay.
Yeah, it was the two people that got, what was it? They gave out these weird awards to everybody. And the two people that got these, like, most improved odor or whatever awards. No, the two people, this is a story I've told before, but the two people that got this prize for like most successful or something, they were these twin brothers who were my closest friends when I was in school, who each became the nefarious head of a mining company and had something dreadful associated with their tenure in those roles. The one friend of mine, Benny, he was the head of the Sago mine, where they lied about whether the miners were still alive and went through the pantomime of pretending they were bringing them up and then later found out that they'd been dead for like 2 days.
Right.
And the other one was his brother, Denny. He was they were twins. He was responsible for the, depending on how you... how you measure it, the largest environmental like degradation of any mining, like single release of materials from it was one of those stagnant ponds that they have heavy metals and stuff.
Right, yeah.
And when I saw him at my mother's funeral many years later, I said, hey, how does it feel to be, you know, have caused the worst environmental disaster in coal mining history? And this is why evil is funny, because his response is, well, he says it depends on whether you count it in tons or whether you count it in...
like, oh, that's the way the miners think about things.
Yeah, you know, it's like whether it was liquid or whether it was solid, because it's like this in-between state, you know. Gallons or pounds, that was it, you know, that was the deciding line of whether it was the worst or the second worst.
The second worst,
Anyway, I when my friends got that award, I was sitting in the front row and everybody knew that I was that guy because I said, hey, what'd you guys do? Look at their tax returns. So that was my high school reunion. Also, everyone kept asking me if I was married. Are you married?
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
Are you married? And I said, why are you asking?
You know, you want to get married?
Are you interested? Yeah. That shut him up fast. Well, here again, the politics and capitalism. You probably read or heard or watched or something that there's a new Democratic nominee for the mayor of the great city of New York.
Yes.
Soran Mamdani. And quick as a whistle, Mayor Eric Adams, who's running as an independent, said, hey, all you rich people, give me your money because that guy is not going to be your friend. And so one of his backers was talking about this and they said, you know, New York is the capital of capitalism. And
yes.
I was like, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it's crazy. A socialist Muslim is the leading candidate for
mayor. And not soon enough.
it's pretty strange. And I had not seen any footage of him. And we watched him and the guy that's a runner-up, that's they both voted for each other in ranked choice.
Did you read the about controller,
Yeah. Watched them appear on the Colbert show.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was impressive. I was like, oh, here's a Jew and a Muslim backing each other and saying, well, you know, here we are in the largest city in the world that's a melting pot, and, you know, one of us could be the mayor.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's not going to be, you know, some rich guy.
He's a little glib, but, you know, I think, you know, when I'm listening to him speak, but that's fine. I mean, one of the things that I get when I see stuff like that is it is about charisma. People do, I mean, and we know this from poll after poll and election after election. Yep. If someone is active and clear about their ideas and their ideas are understandable and you can immediately see what they're going to do for you,
yes,
you're like, yeah, that guy. That's the one.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, despite his insanity, I think that's what people thought they were getting, of course, when they voted for the president, the people that did.
Right. And the election in New York may be coming down to the idea that, you know, helping people have better lives, which is one of the things that Trump supposedly ran on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you actually can do that, even if you're not going to do that, you might get elected just because it sounds good.
The thing is, it really hit me because I remember, you remember the book, What's the Matter with Kansas, right?
Yeah.
That was back in the early 2000s. The trick that the Republicans pulled every single time, that they run as populists, and then when they get elected, everything, of course, is for the billionaires. Yeah. And then when Trump first started making noises about running and articulating some of his positions back in 2016, people, 15 and 16, people were saying, well, this could be different this time. Maybe that analysis is no longer correct because here's a guy who's going to help the little guy, you know, or whatever. Well, first of all, he's only going to help the little white guy. So we know that.
Yeah.
That's the front one thing. But the other thing is, no, it's still not only is it a good analysis, but it's even worse now than it was.
Much truer than it was. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, when Bush had his tax cuts, he was like, okay, well, we'll blow money like drunken sailors, and that's that.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, well, we're going to actually take money
away from people, and we're clawing back, folks.
Here's a poll I saw that I was amused by. So the Marquette Law School does a poll here in the state of Wisconsin, and it's fairly reputable. And they look at partisan differences. They look at who's going to vote for whom and all so on and so forth. And what I thought was really funny was there are two issues, apparently, that no matter where you are on the political spectrum, people in Wisconsin agree on.
Hmm. Beer and cheese? Are those political issues now? I guess maybe they are.
Yeah. They think that marijuana should be legal.
Oh. Of course.
And they think that there should be no cell phones in K-12 classrooms.
Oh.
So that's the young vote and the old vote there.
Why do they have those little phones?
You know? And then the marijuana. Well, that could span the generations.
Yeah, exactly. There's some old people that are definitely high.
Yeah, yeah. So the poll was conducted the week of June 13th. They actually cite their margin of error, which is what you'd expect from a reputable pollster. That's about 5% margin of error. But still, it was pretty surprisingly in favor of marijuana and no phones in the classroom. So
I guess I'd never thought about that. My kid's 22, so, and he didn't have a cell phone until he was a teenager, and he didn't take it to school. And now I'm guessing every child everywhere has some device that's attached to them.
Usually, actually, physically.
Yeah.
Wow, That's the next step.
The thing I'm thinking is eye chips. You get little implants in your eyes, and then you can buy things by blinking.
Oof. That's what we call the upgrade. Have you had it yet?
Yes.
I was sad to see this. Wisconsin Public Radio. We don't often talk about Wisconsin Public
Radio. Oh, yes, our friends over at WPR.
But WPR is having financial pressures right now, and as a result, they've canceled three of their nationally syndicated programs. These are things, of course, you have to pay for. And it's, to the best of our knowledge, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, or Zebra Pester, as we always call him on the show.
Zebra Pester.
Yes. And Beta, or BETA. And they said they just they have to be looking at where they can trim their budgets because the way things are going right now, for any kind of nonprofit media,
yes,
you're having problems, and that kind of applies to us too.
It does.
We're thinking about where our money's going to be coming from in the future.
We're thinking about canceling the show. You know,
that's been
sorry. Mel has actually been taken out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll just take Mel out, and then you know,
you roughed him up.
Pants will flounder, and won't know what to do, and then it'll just go off the air.
Took him out, broke his hip. Put him in the back of one of those big black limos.
He didn't see who the driver was.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, this program costs absolutely nothing. So, and you get every penny's worth.
You get all sorts of benefits from it that are free. No, it is sad. I like Zorba's show. Zorba's been on for a long time, and the best of our knowledge has been on forever. I mean, those are shows that are, you know, that I can't remember not listening to And I do listen to public radio because I like shows like that. And I guess it's since the pandemic, really, that listenership has gone down. It seems to me that our listenership actually kind of went up during the pandemic. That's the impression we got.
Yeah.
We didn't have problems fundraising or appealing to people. Not to be braggarts or anything. I guess we're on a smaller scale, though. We're not, you know, raising millions and millions of dollars like they are. And I think the CPB problem, if Congress gets their act together and decides to claw back CPB funding, that'll impact us, but it'll probably impact them more.
Yeah.
I think they get a great deal of their money from it. So,
well, what I was happy to hear was that the best of our knowledge was not being broadcast locally, because we're the 32nd best of our knowledge. So we just moved up one space in the queue, and I'm really happy about that. So this show now, 31st best of our knowledge. So
very nice.
I just finished today. I mentioned Jaws, talking about old films. There's a lot of good films that came out in 1975. I just finished watching one of the great American films, and I encourage people, if you get an opportunity to do it, it's 50th anniversary of it. Came out summer of 1975, Nashville.
Excellent. Oh, yes.
Robert Altman. That is an amazing movie. If you want to, it's still relevant today. I mean, a lot of things have changed. Technology's changed. The music business has changed. But there's something about that movie. It's parodic in places. A little bit too much every now and then. But mostly, it's a pretty sincere representation of American culture at a certain point that still seems like it has a lot to say.
I will watch it again. I ran the Union Film Series at Iowa State University for a couple of years. And this is back in the Stone Age. Early 90s before things were, it would take, you know, years before things would be on VHS.
Sure.
So I watched movies, I featured movies that I could not see and not, had not seen. So we did all Altman for a thing, and I watched Nashville like four times in a row.
Wow.
Because I was like, oh, I've missed a whole bunch of things. And then I watched it again. And every time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's happening? Oh, wow. So
did you miss any edit? Did you see editing discontinuities that you hadn't seen before? When I was young and I watched Star Wars like eight times, like everyone did when it first came out, I remember saying, oh, wait, his sleeve was over there before. And it's like, wait, I'm seeing this too many times.
I saw some boom shadows. You know, you don't usually catch those the first time. So
Yeah.
That was the take. They had to use that take. That was the best one. So there's the boom shadow right over their head.
Yep.
So yes, I would watch Nashville again.
And, yeah, I encourage people to. And it's a political thing, because there's no other way I can say it, but a weird ass political candidate that's kind of like the centerpiece to it.
Yep.
It has all sorts of weird ideas. Like, really, it's the randomness of this guy's ideas, which are sprinkled as a sort of, you know, bass note throughout the entire film. Boom, here's another crazy ass thing. Yep. He's flying around in his little van and he's broadcasting on a loudspeaker, we need to change the national anthem, you know, things like this. And it's like, okay, where is this coming from exactly? I mean, I know it's hard to sing, but I mean, whatever.
That movie is 50 years old. Jeez.
50 years old. 50. Oof. Big old 5-0. Earth is being cooked at a quickening pace.
Oh.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. I'm also having a hard time separating out the capitalist section and the science section anymore.
Who's doing the cooking?
Well, we are.
Oh.
And, yep. Summer's barely started, and you probably noticed that the United States has been smothered in a record heat dome. But here's the one that really going to bite you. Alaska saw its first heat advisory ever this month. Yep. And, of course, this is all coming on the heels of 2024, which was the hottest calendar year in the recorded history of human beings. So just put that in your pipe and smoke it, but not too much, because you're warming the air. Report published last week found that human-caused global warming is now increasing by 0.27 degrees Celsius per decade.
Wow!
And so if you look at the old trend line, I can't really show that to you because, again, I'm just talking. But the trend line is it really starts to go up tremendously, and it's. The rate was recorded at 0.2 degrees in the 1970s, and the rate of increase has been expanding ever since. Of course, this doesn't come as a surprise to pesky scientists, people that actually know things, as opposed to people who make it up. Their measurements have been following these predictions for a long time, but the thing that scares them is it turns out it's actually going faster than they had thought.
So we have baked Alaska to look forward to.
Oh!
Oh! Groan. Hey, it's
you got a bell for that one.
All right. It's Monkey Time with Mel and Floyd. Sans Mel. It's Monkey Time with pants.
Yeah.
Monkeys with pants.
Not a good idea unless you equip them with, like, you know, elderly diapers or something.
All right, we're halfway through the show. Let's do some announcements. Are you listening to WRT Madison?
Hi, my name is Matt Farley. I'm the guy who has released more than 26,000 songs. I'm also a filmmaker, and I am proud that 4-Star Video is presenting a double feature of my movies at the Bartell Theater. It starts at 4 p.m. on Sunday, June 29th, with Local Legends, a hilarious depiction of life as a small-time artist. After that, I'll perform a few of my 26,000 songs. Then, it's Local Legends Bloodbath, the shocking sequel, which examines the potential downside to devoting your life to recording 26,000 songs. Ticket links at BartellTheater.org and 4starvideorental.com. Or keep listening for a chance at free tickets from WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com. And we're back.
Hey.
We never went away. We were just sitting here waiting.
Yeah, we were. That's a trade secret. We're not supposed to give that away.
We didn't leave the studio.
No, we didn't. I thought about it, but hey, it's travel season for many people. Mm. People are going from the United States are going to Europe many this time of year, and believe me, it's not exactly a paradise for those who live in Europe. But here's what something I never really thought of. I mean, we know about the, you know, the giant ships where everybody gets off all at once and tramps all over the place and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But here's something I didn't even think about. It's when it's travel season for Americans, it's selfie season.
Oh.
Which means guard the artwork, because everybody, you know, you look at a masterpiece, you know, a masterpiece of grace and beauty and so on, and you think to yourself, do you know what would really look good in front of that? Me.
Me.
Yeah. You know, a large German would really make that look nice. And so this is just a Saturday, a visitor to the Uffizi Galleries in Florence stepped backwards into a painting.
Oh, yes, it happens.
He was posing like its subject, who was one of the Medicis. And he said, oh, I'll just, you know, blah, 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 you know, that's... and. By the way, one of my, this is terrible. One of my favorite YouTube video things that I love is tourists giving royal guards at Buckingham Palace a bad time.
Yes.
And then them like smacking them or yelling at them.
Wow.
Yeah. They do not take any fuss. And, for some reason, I just really,
it's probably
like,
very satisfying to watch.
It's satisfying to me because it's not about you, and it really is not. And the same thing here. It's not about you. It's not about the perfect picture. It's about you, like, looking at this amazing work of art. And, you know, if you want to have your own, this is the great thing about the internet.
Yeah.
If you want to have your own, like, image of it,
yeah,
you can find one that somebody else took of it. You find one that the museum took of it, and you can have that as your desktop or send it to relatives. I guess they have to prove they were there or something. But at any rate, this happens over and over. The problem of tourists who come to museum is that they want to make memes or selfies for social media. And I blame that Emily in Paris, by the way. I think she started it.
Oh, is that what that show's about?
Yeah. She's the meme mistress. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is the problem. Now, the only experience I've ever had of this directly was once when I was at Versailles, and there was a couple there, and this was... I almost got into a scuffle. There was a couple there, and apparently Mr. wanted to take a lovely picture of Mrs. in front of some painting of Napoleon or something. He literally grabbed me and pulled me out of the way.
Wow.
So he put his hands upon my corporeal form and pulled me aside so he could take a picture of Mrs. A-hole for the family album. So I'm just like, wow, I was not pleased with that.
That guy did not know that Versailles is the city of peace, obviously.
Yeah, right. We all know that. So this is a problem. People are taking their pictures. They flock to these galleries. And then, you know, a problem also, by the way, is they don't have air conditioning in a lot of these galleries, too. You get too many people in there, and that's a pretty swampy place to be.
So you're going to take a droopy picture of yourself.
A droopy picture of yourself. Oof. Yes, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
Too many tourists toting too many phones. So, you know, we're all agreed on the idea, apparently, that we don't want any phones in the classroom.
Right.
But, you know, I'm saying no phones in the museum.
Well, you know, as I've always said, you can't spell meme without referring to yourself
me,
twice.
Me, me, me. Me, me. Me. Very good. Hey, Arkansas decided to delay a statue they were going to be putting up.
Bill Clinton?
They wanted to put a statue on the grounds of the Arkansas State Capitol. It was going to be just behind where the Ten Commandments are, a little grassy meadow. And they thought it would be a healing gesture if they had a monument to the unborn children. Yes, they wanted to show that we won.
Wow.
And so a bunch of people have been coming together to try to put in the state's first official anti-abortion memorial. But apparently, it's not going too well.
Is it like a giant uterus or what?
No.
Go with the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, well, I think just stick with the Ten Commandments. it's funny you should say that. There have been a lot of different proposals. One entry called for 1,400 plants and, of course, Bible quotations. Sure. And I double dog dare you to find where it talks about abortion in the Bible, because you ain't going to find it.
No.
And then there was also the idea of maybe having a little waterfalls there. And then there were some ones that were a little more literal. Again, we had 1,400 suggestions, or a bunch of suggestions, probably 1,400 plants was the one suggestion. And that was they were going to have a living wall about the, like the Maya Lin thing.
Oh,
names
sure.
I don't know where they get the names from, but they're going to do that. And then they were thinking about images of fetuses and infants, which, so even though they seem like the people are getting getting together, they can't quite figure out how they want to express this this sentiment. And people are starting to think that maybe that's not a sentiment we really express in a straightforward way.
Wow.
I think just "we won" would probably be what they would like to sip it on there. So.
Yeah, like a picture, like a monument of people like patting each other on the back or something like that.
Here you go. President Trump has made legal threats over outlets, both the New York Times and the CNN, for quoting from that intelligence report that said that they really did not blow up the Iran nuclear program. His lawyers, of course, he's got a platoon of those. They're right there. I don't know if you saw them during the parade.
They were in the tanks.
Yeah, they were the most ferocious looking thing that you see on that street.
They actually,
Look out! Here they come. vicious people. No, these lawyers of his, they want the both the New York Times and CNN to retract their stories and apologize for their reporting, because they say that the reporting, which claims that they didn't actually, quote unquote, obliterate. Remember, that
right,
was the key word that all of the minions were supposed to use, is obliterate. They did not. They claim that these counterclaims were false, defamatory, and unpatriotic.
It was the best obliteration, I think, is what he wants them to say.
It was the best of times, yes.
Yes.
The New York Times responded yesterday, and they said that the Trump administration had already confirmed the existence of the report, which was issued by an agency called the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Yes.
And the paper's lawyer said no retraction is needed.
No, I don't think so.
But that's not the point. They're not trying to win.
No.
They're trying to harass, because that's what Trump does best. He's a serial harasser. So no matter what
he's
the
just
venue.
He's just going to sue them all.
Yep,
exactly. Maybe.
Yep. Maybe, or maybe not.
Maybe he's just going to forget about it.
Taco Trump.
Yep.
Economy shrank 0.4%. Pardon me, 0.5% in the first quarter of 2025.
Wow. That's more than I think they thought it would.
Yep. Yeah. The U.S. economy shrank by 0.5%. This is how you can tell as the Germans call it, the Gleichschaltung is not complete, because they're actually getting data that isn't being massaged yet by the president.
Yes.
Again, he starts with the massage.
Mm.
First quarter growth was weighed down by a surge of imports as U.S. companies and households rushed to buy foreign goods.
Ah,
so
yes.
He managed to, just like the abortions are up this year in the country, everything these folks do, managed to produce the opposite result of what they intend. So the January-March drop in the gross domestic product, that's the nation's outputs of goods and services, reversed a 2.4 increase in the last 3 months of 2024.
What?
So the other president, that was the Trump economy. And now, of course, in the first 3 months of this year, that's the Biden economy. So
that's right. That's right. I read an article, it might have been in the Times, that said that the companies that have dropped DEI have lost business, and several companies that have sort of doubled down on their DEI initiatives, like Costco, have actually seen their sales like quadruple. Because Costco came out specifically and said, you know, diversity in workforce is an important part of our business model and an important part of representing, you know, the United States and so forth. And Costco is apparently busier than they've ever been.
Wow.
And places like Target that dropped it specifically and made a big deal out of it have not seen their sales go up, and have actually seen them go down. So I don't know if that's people are being more conscious of that, or if that people are, you know, or those businesses are hiring people that actually spend money at their own, you know, at those businesses and others.
I feel like you just cracked open the door and a little ray of sunlight came in there, Elmer. Thank you. Well, thank you for that.
I just remembered it when you're talking about the economy. It's like, places are actually doing, you know, better because they're diverse. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. Speaking of diversity, you may have heard about the local pastor up in Waupun. He got really annoyed because the Waupun Public Library had a pride display
in
their upstairs section of the building, which was timed to coincide with the soon-to-be ended June Pride Month. The Waupun Library Board was discussing a display policy that does not specifically relate to pride materials, but at the board meeting, he's a pastor. He belongs to something called the Christian Reformed Church.
Hmm.
He and nine other people were there, and he was talking about God's love and blah, 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 and you know, this is all sin and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, sure.
So the choice of materials, the librarian, the desk assistant at the library, and some others spoke at the meeting as well, and said, "Hey, you know, we just stock the books. We don't make choices, and we put up the pride display because, you know, it's what's happening this month, and we don't believe in censorship." And I thought there was a telling remark that was made by one of the members of the board there. They said, "I would never ask the library to remove copies of the Bible, for example." And you know, I think that that's a lot of grooming, I think, that we see in the with respect to supernatural beliefs in this society.
Yeah,
I'm from a very young age. You know, it seems like you start with Santa, and then you know that's the gateway drug. There's a guy in the sky that brings you things if you're good, and then you know, and then it goes on from there. But
wow, so maybe what the pastor wanted was they wanted to maybe balance it out with a prejudice display.
This is the thing about this, you know, like the percentage of Republicans now who apparently we're in the 10th anniversary, decade anniversary of Obergefell, gay marriage in the United States.
10 years,
And I think, and it turns out Republicans are starting to turn against it when you do polling.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I think they just don't like the idea that they're in charge of telling everybody else what to do anymore, you know? You know, as soon as somebody says, well, sexism is actually a sin and racism is a sin, it's like, wait, you know, we get to decide what sins are. We've had that power for the last 7,000 years.
Right.
So,
yep.
You know, our folks have. So what are you telling us that this behaving this way is unpleasant or unkind?
Yeah, but aren't we all sinners? Isn't that the whole, you know, like...
We're in the hands of an angry God,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So what difference does it make?
Right.
There's more sinner or less sinner? I've never really...
When Leo became Pope, I have a lesbian friend who said to me, she said, you know, I'm not thrilled about the Catholic Church, but, you know, as long as he just thinks it's one sin among a bunch of ones, I think that's an improvement. And I thought, actually, that's a good way of thinking about it.
That's a very nice way of thinking about it.
I mean, the only thing Jesus ever said about sex and sexuality was, don't get a divorce. And I don't really... I think evangelical churches would fall apart if anybody followed that rule. So.
Yeah.
But anyway... Hey, billionaires got help down in Florida with their sewage system problem.
Hmm.
Yeah, the poor things. There's an island that's home to our buddy and his, Jeff Bezos, and a few other billionaires. It's an artificial island called Indian Creek Village.
Hmm. I've not heard of this.
No, it's a completely made-up place. It's just a little artificial island. It's off the coast of South Florida.
Hmm.
And it's been under pressure for decades to get rid of their shallow septic systems because in a very, poignantly metaphorical way, they're poisoning the system around them by focusing on themselves and whatever they want to do. So the village only has like a few dozen properties on this private man-made island. But apparently their septic system, they're just pumping a lot of sludge. We call those in economics externalities.
Yes.
And so a neighboring village said, "Oh, okay, but you got to do something about this, you know, like we're not going to pay for this. You should have to do, you know, your own sanitation and so on." So as you can guess, because when you have a lot of money, you can do pretty much anything.
Yes.
The village of Indian Creek got a lawyer. He was in that platoon that you saw during the parade. And they have filed preliminary work to test and prepare for eventual connection to the nearby village.
Hmm.
So they're forcing the nearby village to basically absorb the cost of their own...
Of their own waste.
Of their own waste, yes. What does that sound like?
Poop happens.
Yeah, poop does happen.
Yeah. And it happens on a floating island? Is it like a plastic island? What I don't quite grasp what that is.
I think the
it's
island.
Just a big boat.
I think this island is floating on a giant pool of it. A fill in the blank. Yeah.
Wow.
Let's see. There's a story. Ancient North America had extensive farming.
Hmm.
This is an interesting piece of information because, of course, the Europeans that came to North America said, they don't understand the concept
of anything.
Land ownership or anything like that. But a new study has found that a thickly forested sliver of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, the UP, is the most complete ancient agricultural location in the eastern United States.
Hmm.
It's the 60 Islands Archaeological Site is recognized as the ancestral home of the Menominee Nation.
Oh, yes.
And... there's a 2 mile stretch of the Menominee on this 2 mile stretch of the Menominee River. 60 islands is defined by cold temperatures, poor soil quality, and so on. But at one time, there was intensive farming there, and it was they found that there was communities there from about A.D. 1000 to maybe 1600 or so, and they were seasonally mobile, but they came back to the area to do farming a portion of the year.
And what did they grow? Were they able to determine that, or they just figured out from soil sample that, you know, they had been cultivating?
Yeah, I don't know what they grew there. This isn't in the story, but they grew corn, of course.
Oh, right, yeah.
So white kernel corn, but mostly they were just noticing that the, you know, usual corn, beans, and squash, but they were just noticing mostly the way it was laid out. So
that's right. Europeans didn't do it first.
They just did it better, right? In their minds.
They did it with guns.
Yeah, they did it with guns and slave labor. Yeah, right, exactly. Ugh. Here's a story. I was looking through the obits, and I found a really interesting story about this guy. His name was James Patterson, and he had an unusual middle name. He was an African-American man. He was the son of a black American set designer and a Ukrainian artist. He lived in the Soviet Union. His middle name, I thought it was funny, his father's name was Lloyd Patterson. So in good Russian fashion, his name was James Lloydovich Patterson. He just died. He was 91. He was a symbol for ages in the Soviet Union. He was their sort of non-racism. Not a huge number, but many African Americans in the 1930s and 40s immigrated to, or pardon me, not the 40s, the 1920s and 30s, immigrated to the Soviet Union, which built itself as being a non-racialist society.
Wow.
And James, little James, was in a movie in 1936 called Circus, which attacked U.S. racism. In the movie, he was a little boy at the time, and he was a part of a circus troupe in the movie, and he became a huge child celebrity. And then as he got older, he decided that, he would move on to other things. He became a published poet later in his life. But the fact of the matter is, his father had moved to Russia to get away from racism in the United States. His father came there in 1932 as a group of 22 black Americans to work on a film about American racism.
And wow.
James lived there. First he lived in Sverdlovsk, which is now Yekaterinburg again. And then they lived in Moscow for a long time. Worked on as an English language radio host for the Soviet state, and did a whole bunch of different stuff. He was in the military for a while, and in the Navy. He published first poetry collection in 1962. It was entitled Russia and Africa.
Wow.
And he just passed away.
I guess I'd never thought about a society that's not racist, but has other issues about culture and about government interference.
Yeah. I'm reading an excellent book right now called Karl Marx in America. It just recently came out. And it's a series of chapters on the reception of Marx and Marxism in the United States at different decades, starting in the late 19th century.
Right.
And yeah. I mentioned a little bit about this last week, that the extent to which Marx was kind of enamored of Abe Lincoln. He thought Abraham Lincoln was really cool. But each decade sort of looked for and found a different Marx.
Right.
And he always was, very much, he thought that race and racism was a tool, a ploy.
Yes.
Obviously, an atavistic, reactionary tool to get people to divide the working class and so on. And in the early Soviet Union, at least, they tried very hard to maintain that particular...
Yeah, and it still works today.
Yeah.
Yeah, our government's still making, poor white people think all the brown people are the reason that we're in economic trouble and why there are no jobs.
Yeah. Well, and actually, what's sad about it is they also tell the black and brown people that it's the black and brown people that aren't from here. Mm-hmm, that are mm-hmm. So there's always somebody further down the hill.
You can divide it a little bit further.
Pull up to hold up to the ridicule and hatred. Oh, let's see. What have I got here? I thought this was bizarre. So Sam Altman, he is the chief executive of the artificial intelligence company OpenAI. He was being interviewed on a Hard Fork broadcast. It's a tech broadcast that the New York Times does. And he said, I just love this. This is what you call projection, right? He says... He's talking about the president of the United States, Mr. Trump. He says, I think he really gets it with AI. He gets AI. And it's like, he doesn't get anything. What are you talking about? He's a moron. Look, it's all computer. It's like, okay, just keep saying that.
Yes. I mean, shouldn't he employ AI to just sort of do his job for him and then he can sit around and be rich? I mean, aren't we at that point that
I wish he would.
Yeah.
I could think that the most flagrant hallucinating AI could string together some sentences better than he does. Of course, he's usually up sitting on his gold throne at 3 in the morning texting. Yeah. I think that's part of the problem. But some of those screeds that he writes in the middle of the night in all caps are pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, AI could probably do it better.
I bet it could.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, there's people that write for SNL that can imitate his rhythms. Surely AI can do it.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention that in the Smarty Pants house, it's all about the Vera C. Rubin Observatory down in Chile right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hadn't had a chance to see some of the images, early images from this telescope, it's been two decades in the making. It's very exciting. And it provides a really fine-grained, comprehensive view of the night sky, which is really unlike anything that astronomers here on Earth have ever seen. And it's probably the greatest sort of discovery machine that human beings have ever built with respect to looking out into the universe. And we're lucky to get it because, of course, money's being cut back for anything that has to do with finding out what world we live in. That's basically it. Rubin is a joint venture of the U.S. Energy Department and the National Science Foundation, which I just want to mention to people, and if you know this, they currently no longer have a home. the Housing and Urban Development is moving into the National Science Foundation's headquarters now.
What?
So I think they're picking out cardboard boxes to live on the street or something. No. We don't need those guys anymore. Wow. Oh, yeah. So, and of course, it's named after a woman. So we were a little leery whether it would even like be able to, you know, get going.
Yeah, but urban development has gone crazy, apparently.
One of the big things they're really interested in is a lot of the data will help them to investigate dark energy. You know, they know that this is out there. They don't know what it is. I don't like that name, but it's just
that seems very sinister.
It has its own PR agency or something, but also dark matter. This mysterious substance that behaves sort of like kind of a galactic glue that holds everything together. So we know there's got bound to be more matter than we think that we can see. So maybe if we can have more finely grained resolutions of what we see out there, then something like this.
Then we can figure out if we are actually in a black hole or not.
Yes, I saw that.
I saw that the other day as well. Yeah. And I was like, well, I have no way of knowing that's true. It seems kind of cool.
Hello.
The idea that the galaxies are spiraling a certain way, and if they were pulled into the black hole, they would continue that spiraling energy. And
the problem with that is the sampling that was done to figure out the spiraling. I mean, there's zillions of galaxies, and they look like a few hundred or something.
Right, it's some of them are spinning this way, and maybe
the local ones are doing something different. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. One of the things I was recently reading this thing about Roger Penrose, the famous physicist, and it's like one of the things about being super smart is sometimes you can think you're like smarter than you are, you know, about like everything. I mean, why would you think, you know, just because you're a great basketball player, why would you think you could play baseball, you know, for example, right? I mean, he's got Penrose has all kinds of crazy theories about, you know, consciousness, and it's like he's just making it up at that point, you know, and I could do that. And I do on a weekly basis. So
that's what the show is all about.
Yeah,
he's not actually reading from articles. He's just pulling those out of the air.
Yeah, well, out of the air. I'm glad you said that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I want to reiterate that we're thinking that if you are interested and you are a regular Minion, regular listener, and you've got some time on a Friday afternoon to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes or a little longer on air, we really would like to have some of the fans, you know, those of you who enjoy the program.
Yes.
Those of you who bear with us week after week. Because I think that would be, I like the idea of the interactivity of that.
Yes.
It really appeals to me. And with Mel not being able to be here, at least for a little bit, he'll be back.
Yeah,
but in the short term, it'd be nice to have some of the Minions. They're doing so many things, I have to tell you, Elmer, to step up right now to help him out and send him kind words and stuff. And here's a little something else we could contribute, be a real community around the show and come in and maybe, you know, jawbone around a little bit. So if you are interested in that, just let us know. You can send a message to melonfloydmailbag, all one word, at gmail.com, or you can contact the studio. I don't know, who would they get in touch with? I guess it would be Nathan. I don't know who would be.
Probably Nate. I mean, it's a committee that sort of pitches in for this show. So
maybe Elmer, you could help grease the wheels.
I could do that. Let me post something on the website. We'll attach it when D-Cubed puts up the podcast here. We'll make sure we send him a message and we can put that in there as part of that.
I appreciate it.
So yeah, that would be a lot of fun. It's either that or we just train AI to do Mel's job, which I don't think it'd be that hard to do. We actually did an experiment here. Tom Jones, our tech director, plays with computer stuff and AI, and so he actually trained. Supposedly, you can train AI to imitate you fully with about like 6 or 7 hours of listening to your voice. So if you just record yourself and do that, it'll do it right away.
Yeah, yeah.
But the more it learns over, I think, 5 or 6 hours, it will actually get a very accurate representation of your inflection and your pausing and so forth. So I could just take old versions of this show and just train it to do Mel, and then
the holodeck will be mankind's last invention.
It'll be really easy to do. No, we would love to have people on the air, and I'm happy to help facilitate that. And I see there are 200 people listening online, so at least one or two of you would be available to come down here. We can figure that out and help pitch in. Thanks to everybody that's helped out in Mel's absence. I'm glad we have a live show. I was like, oh, we're going to pull some archives, and that's fun. But Yeah. You know, and people are like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
When well, is the show
I mean,
from?
If we start talking about the McKinley administration, we'll be right in right in step these days. So,
you guys are on back then. Thanks for letting me have the opportunity to engineer and be on the air with you. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
And you're listening to WRT Madison. And breaking news, the faux cougar is stepping in to fill in for the real Jaguar. Where is Jaguar? Is he, like, out of town? Working. Oh, that's right. That's right. He told me he was going
to
be...
I have to announce the weekend.
The weekend. Oh, are you ready for the weekend?
If I don't do that, the minions will not stop
that's
working
right.
all weekend.
So. And everybody will just feel weak.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening today. The Insurgent Radio Kiosk is up next.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, June 27th.
This is Bird Note. Although many seabirds utter groans and croaks, the pigeon guillemot produces this lovely series of trills and whistles. Black seabirds with large white wing patches and fire engine red feet, pigeon guillemots are native to the North Pacific Ocean and frequent coastlines from California to Alaska and Russia. Colonies of 4 to 100 birds select a rocky cliff, sandy bluff, or artificial structure for their nesting territory. Then the fun begins. Pigeon guillemots perform elaborate courtship rituals to woo their mates. Like exuberant children, they chase each other, dunk under the water, and appear to play a game of leapfrog or leap duck. Then, a pair will take off from the water and fly side by side in large circles and loops, a perfect synchronized flying act. Courtship continues until the parents become busy tending their burrows high on the cliff. Soon after the young fledge, they join their parents on the water, and the whole colony departs the area. The beach is quiet again until next spring, when the pigeon guillemots return and begin their playful, musical courtship anew.